Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tomorrow at noon, the city of Chicago will celebrate the 50th anniversary of one of our most celebrated and controversial pieces of public art. We're talking about the Picasso at Daley Plaza. The sculpture was commissioned back in 1967, and if you were around, you know that it wasn't necessarily a slam dunk. Even politicians were concerned, some even wanting a more pedestrian statue of Ernie Banks or other sports figures. But we've come to love this amazing piece of art. And in studio tonight to talk about its lasting impact and, of course, the anniversary, Danny Shulman. He's the program director of cultural affairs at DCase. This year, they're celebrating the year of public art. This is a big one-year thing, this is the re-unveiling's part of that. Also in studio, Eric Coyne. He's the design director for Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, the firm that Picasso made the sculpture for back in the 60s. Eric, Danny, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So let's get right into this. Why a re-unveiling? I mean, because you could celebrate this, you could do a lot of different ways, but the idea of recreating or re-unveiling a statue, where'd this idea come from?
Right. Well, it's such a landmark. It was one of the first monumental, abstract works of art in a city, in a public place, at the scale it's at. And it's also a kind of beginning of 1967 is also a year of beginnings with community-based public art. The Wall of Respect is the other now lost object that we're celebrating this year. And that was a mural at 43rd and Langley that was a collaboration between a group of artists and a community. So in a way, it was on the other end of the public art spectrum.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, today you could put a big eyeball on State Street or something else, and people would be like, "Ah, it's public art." But in 1967, the unveiling of a 50-foot Picasso statue in Daley Plaza was something that Chicago had yet to deal with.
Right. Absolutely. And it was, a kind of it came from a place of power. It came from Mayor Daley. It came from the leading architectural firm in Chicago and one of the leading ones in the nation. It was part of a reimagination of the central business district of the Loop. So it's very closely tied into the kind of rebirth of Chicago commercially.
And that's the reason why in the first place they wanted to have a statue down there.
Yeah,
a sculpture.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, I want to bring you in. Skidmore, it's funny because it almost becomes a footnote to this story because you almost always think somehow Mayor Daley just, had a relationship with Picasso and made it happen in a plaza that wasn't named after him yet. But for you, talk about the Skidmore and how Skidmore got involved in this in 1967.
Well, the story goes back to the creation of the building that the sculpture stands in front of, and that building was designed not by SOM alone, but an unusual team of architects working together on the building and the plaza. The three firms were Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, C.F. Murphy, and Lobel, Schlossman, Bennett, and Dart. And today it's hard to say, from our perspective, who did what, but the commonly acknowledged author of the building is a man named Jacques Brownson, who is credited with the design of the tower, which is awesome. It still is a very strong, very compelling piece of architecture today. But that group working together is said or alleged to have voted as a group on who should do the piece of art in the plaza. And they allegedly unanimously voted on Picasso, who at that time was super famous. I mean, he was a very accomplished artist, but he wasn't really It was a bit of an unusual choice because he was not at the peak of his fame at that time. He was kind of had moved out of the public eye, and younger artists, more edgy people were coming up like Richard Serra or Kleis Oldenburg at that time, both of whom have since done work in Chicago.
And I would say not necessarily his cup of tea to do sculptures for cities.
He had never done one before.
Right. I mean, we know him from his work, his art, but not necessarily for public sculptures.
This was the first time he had ever executed a very large scale civic sculpture. He did several after, one in New York at NYU that's surrounded by three high-rise buildings designed by I.M. Pei and another one in Oslo. At the time, he had also been invited by the city of Marseille to do a sculpture, which I don't know if it was ever executed. I think not. But he's reported to have said, when thinking about this, the city of Marseille is a gangster city in France, and they've asked me to do a sculpture. And the city of Chicago is a gangster city, and they've asked me to do this sculpture. You know, what gives with gangster cities and me? Why are they asking me
for these things? Why are they attracted to my work, right?
But in the end, he agreed to do it. I mean, he famously never signed a contract, and the entire process was just done verbally. And so in never legally agreeing to produce the sculpture, he was never bound by any deadline, which in hindsight was probably smart. It allowed him to have his creative process unfold however he wanted. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he did agree to do it, and he made two models with a local metal fabricator. And right up until the very last minute, he was still choosing between the two. And they both, to our eyes today, they look almost indistinguishable, but one was slightly heavier and one was slightly lighter. And at the very last minute, he picked the slightly lighter one. Mm. And that's the one that moved forward.
And Danny, I want to bring you back in just for the idea that, you know, that model that you mentioned, Eric, that model was brought to the attention of Chicago a year before. I mean, before this was actually displayed and put up as a 50-foot, this was given to politicians, to the mayor and other places, and there was still some head-scratching. I mean, we're going to talk about that at, you know, this hour. But the idea that people are like, what is this? This is not what we want in our city downtown. This doesn't represent Chicago. There was a lot of consternation over the process in the modeling phase.
Right. Well, and that was also a kind of closely guarded secret. It was kept to very few eyes. And, you know, Eric can talk very well about the whole process of developing a 50-foot, how many tons, right. 60 tons, something like that, sculpture from a 3-foot high model or a 2.5-foot high model. And it's fascinating how the engineering took over.
So who had it? I mean, the history goes, but I mean, if it's such a tightly closed group or a highly kept secret, who had eyes on this? Was it just the politicians in Chicago?
No, I think very few politicians were able to see it at this point.
It was exhibited in September of 1966 at the Art Institute. It was originally, as we mentioned, built by this fabricator in France with Picasso together. They presented it to a man named Bill Hartman, who was a managing partner at SOM, and he was the kind of liaison between the team of architects and Picasso. And we can talk in more detail about what all that entailed. But in the end, he agreed to do the sculpture. He picked the light one. He gave it to Bill Hartman, who put it in a box and brought it back. And he brought that sculpture back and gave it to a man in the office, a young architect named Fred Lowe. And Fred Lowe's job was to take this handmade, very organic, rough model and convert it into orthographic drawings, plans, sections, and elevations, from which the final design could be structurally engineered, fabricated to be wind tunnel tested, and so forth. And so after all that process had begun, he brings the model back in May of 65, and a year and a few months later, it's exhibited at the Art Institute in public view. Now, I don't think probably a lot of people went to see it, but it wasn't like a blockbuster exhibit. It was a pretty small gallery.
Yeah.
It was the maquette, some photo montages of it in the plaza, and some drawings of it. That's it. Really, what that exhibit did, it put it in the public realm and, frankly, opened it up to attack by by all media. All the newspapers launched crusades, most of them against it.
But I loved about it, and I want to take a break here, but what I loved about that was the resolve of the mayor of Chicago at that time, because with the media and everyone and politicians around him, even people outside of the city saying, oh, this is no good, he essentially said, nope, we're doing it.
He dug in.
Well, and he believed in the experts,
he really
too.
Did.
He had trust in Bill Hartman and, you know, get me the best and it'll be okay.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. Danny Shulman, Program Director for DCASE, Program Director for Cultural Affairs at Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, is here, as well as Eric Coney. He is the Design Director at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, the firm that Picasso made the sculpture for back in the 60s. We're talking about the City of Chicago's re-unveiling, which is tomorrow at noon. It's called Everyone's Picasso, a restaging event of the 1967 unveiling at Daley Plaza. It's going to be musicians, all sorts of stuff happening downtown tomorrow for the re-unveiling of the Picasso. We're talking about it tonight here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests in studio tonight are talking about the re-unveiling of the 1967 unveiling of the Picasso in Daley Plaza. They're doing a restaging of that event tomorrow at noon right in Daley Plaza. In studio with me tonight, Danny Shulman. He's the Program Director for Cultural Affairs at DCASE. Also, Eric Coyne, who is a Design Director at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, the firm that Picasso made the sculpture for back in the 60s. Okay, so let's fast forward to the point where the mayor has the political will and clout. What an interesting concept, right? But the idea that says this is what we're doing with this space, because there was a lot of mostly in the form of the media. The media was saying we don't like this, that we don't know what this is. They were the ones that kind of championed the idea, and aldermen and other politicians picked up that mantle, saying, "Can't we do something else? Can't we do Ernie Banks? Can we do something that's a little bit more universal?" But the mayor stuck to his guns.
Well, and there were Picasso's politics, too, which were exploited. He was a well-known communist and anti-fascist, so
that was easy to pile onto.
Yeah, but I loved Ron Grossman did the piece in the Tribune a couple days ago, which the great quote that mayor said, he said, he's an artist, leave the politics to us. Like, we got our own politics. We don't care what his politics are. And I thought that was very enlightening for a big city mayor. But the mayor did push this forward, saying, yeah, no, I'm not going to take this criticism. We're going to go with this.
He did believe in his team of experts. And he thought, if it's good for Chicago, if it will put Chicago on the map, then it's a good sculpture. And I'm not the one to judge what it looks like or what it represents. We'll leave that to somebody else to worry about. And he just charged forward with it. So kudos to him.
He had an interpretation of it that I thought was really fascinating. And I don't know if someone came up with this idea in his press office or it was his observation, but it goes to how multivalent and how many different ways you can interpret the piece. But his comment was, reminds me of the wings of justice. And I don't know if justice had wings or what, but he made the best of it and came out with a strong statement.
That could have been an early use of strategery, perhaps, on the part of
Possibly, that's right. One of the quotes as well that was in Ron's piece was, you know, what the mayor said in the morning. He said, "We dedicate this celebrated work this morning with the belief that what is strange to us today will be familiar tomorrow." And that's a big part of the Picasso in Daley Plaza. The idea that, you get used to public art and you're like, I don't know what that is. Is it a bird? Is it what kind of skull? I don't know what it is. But after time, it becomes part of the fabric. It almost becomes the fun of it is to try to figure out what it is. Even into the 70s and the 80s, it becomes almost synonymous with Chicago in a way that no other piece of public art has.
But it's maintained its strangeness. It's still, I think, inscrutable and still strange, and that's its strength, I think. It doesn't, it's not any one thing, and it defies categorization, and I think that some people hated it is a great thing. That's a victory. So it's that it has proponents and naysayers is part of what activates it, makes it interesting.
Eric, you guys at SOM before your time, but you guys were the ones who brought the statue or the sculpture to Chicago as part of the project there at Daley Plaza. You got backlash. I mean, there were letters sent to you. There were pros and cons and other things that were happening at SOM that the public has never seen.
Sure. There's for reasons I can't fully explain, SOM was in receipt of all letters and all correspondence generated about the sculpture. Even ones that were sent to City Hall were then rerouted from City Hall back to us in a kind of classic not our problem move. So we have fascinating archives of these letters, both pro and con against the sculpture.
And you have a couple here.
We brought a few choice ones.
Would you mind reading snippets?
Sure. Let's read it. Let's read this one at the end here. This is to Bill Hartman. Dear Bill, congratulations on the culmination of your monumental effort. I'm sure the statue will become our counterpart of such attractions as the Eiffel Tower and the Great Pyramids. This is something that Chicago has been wanting for a long time, and now we have it. I envy you the good feelings you must have in bringing this about, and I'm glad that the architectural profession can share vicariously in the achievement. Mm. This is from a fellow architect. The ones that are more interesting are from
Chicagoans.
Regular Chicagoans. Here's one from an interesting one from the Sun-Times. Dear Mr. Hartman, I thought you might enjoy hearing of the very spontaneous tribute to the Picasso, which I happened to encounter recently on the plaza. One Saturday afternoon, a frail hillbilly-looking man in a long jacket that looked like a Mackinaw, but was not quite, shambled in front of the sculpture and stopped. "Now that's really something else," he mused in a tone of awe. "I'll bet the fellow that made the design on that carried off a bundle." I was nearby and commented, "No, in fact, he didn't. He gave it to the city. His name is Picasso." "Well," rejoined our man in the street, art critic, undaunted, "I bet he gets plenty of work after this." I personally think that this was the best tribute to the Picasso I've ever heard. And while I'm at it, I might mention that since the piece is metal,
white, I have been taking a series of color shots showing the rusting. I was extremely fortunate the first day because I arrived at the plaza just as it was beginning to drizzle, and in 30 to 45 minutes, I saw and recorded changes in rust as they occurred quite rapidly. The beast seemed to come to life in rust right in front of my eyes. It was very spooky. There I was in the enclosure with no one else around, with that great animal towering over me and coming to life. What will it do? What will I do?
Wow.
Don Schwartz.
Don.
Well done.
Yeah, well done. I mean, it's amazing that there's the archives of people who are for and against the Picasso. Rust was a big part of this. You kind of allude to it, but it was funny how that was the one thing that people take from it, because it did rust quick and it did have this, it sort of changed the color of this thing. Talk about that. Talk about, was that the intent of this sculpture? Is it something, because, you know, we were at the early days of public art and display, that the architects and the custodians didn't understand what to do with this metal?
Yeah. Well, I think Eric should take this. I mean, it's all about, it was designed to do this. It was a new process, a new way of making steel.
Really?
And it was the same material that the building was made out of. So it formed this ensemble, an incredible ensemble.
So this is a unique at the time, very new and cutting edge, innovative steel technology called Core-10. And Core-10 steel at that time and in that building was very new and had probably never been used or had rarely been used on very large-scale buildings, but went on to be used for many buildings and many sculptures. I mean, Richard Serra's entire career is built on using Core-10 steel. But the idea of this steel is that it rusts, and it rusts on purpose so that the rust forms a protective sacrificial layer on the outside of the structural steel, which is protected inside. And so when the sculpture we see today is that rich, dark kind of tobacco brown. But when it was new, when it was unveiled, it was bright orange. And you look at color photographs of it from that day, and it's shocking how different even
that's amazing.
The sculpture and the building, because the building was finished 18 months earlier. The building had probably already started to mellow.
Well, it's an architectural feat to have that kind of metal. But to the outside, to the Chicagoan, to the citizens walking by, like, this
rusty junk.
They just use bad metal.
Well, and that was that kind of captivated a lot of unexpected areas in Chicago, including burlesque. My colleague Tim Samuelson has noted that there was a stripper in Chicago on West Madison, I think, named Rusty Picasso. So it entered the
cultural
popular
milieu.
Realm. Yeah.
Oh, man. Tomorrow, a restaging of the Picasso. It's called Everyone's Picasso. It's a restaging event of the 1967 unveiling at Daly Plaza. There's going to be musicians. And are you guys going to tent it? Are you going to pull the tent off?
No, we're leaving it naked. We're leaving it free and open. You know, I think we don't want to impose that much on it. I hope we're beyond the days of putting sports teams' hats on it and things like that. It doesn't make the Picasso estate happy, and I think it's disrespectful. So we're actually going to – the unveiling is going to be an act of imagination and kind of symbolic, and we've commissioned an artist, Edra Soto, who's designed a kind of symbolic veil that will pass out so that people at a moment in the ceremony can actually veil themselves and imagine the plaza without the sculpture.
Wow.
And it's actually a gorgeous piece of art in itself.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break for the news, and we'll come back. I want to ask about the lasting impact of this piece of art. And also, as the year of public art, whether or not the Picasso is as Mike Royko kind of alluded to, and others have said, that it's a fabric of Chicago. I mean, it's part of everything we're talking about. You can't imagine a Chicago without it. But can we? I mean, as the world moves on and more public art becomes every corner of Chicago, can we live in a city without the Picasso? Danny Shulman, Program Director for Cultural Affairs at DCAS, is in studio along with Eric Coyne. He's a design director at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, the firm that Picasso made the sculpture for back in the 60s. Like they said, Everyone's Picasso, the restaging event of the 1967 unveiling at Daly Plaza, the 50th anniversary, is tomorrow at noon. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Danny Shulman. He's the Program Director for Cultural Affairs at DCAS, and Eric Coyne. He's a Design Director at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill. And we're talking about the Picasso. It's 50th anniversary. There will be a restaging event of the 1967 unveiling at Daly Plaza tomorrow at noon. It's called Everyone's Picasso. It's going to have musicians and art and veils. what a world would be like if the Picasso was never there. And it's such a, you know, it's so fun because we kind of alluded to the idea that people didn't really know what it was. And in a way, and I'm not sure if that was the intent of the artist or if that has just become the intent of Chicago, in the way that it's almost like field trips and kids and people sliding on the sculpture, but also continuing to guess what it is. To continuing to say, is it a bird? Is it, oh, look at the head. You know, look at the color plays a part. I mean, was that the intention of Picasso in creating this art that was so abstract?
Well, Picasso's art isn't really all that abstract. It's never divorced from reality. It's very poetic. It's about metamorphosis, about change, about defying expectations. It's extremely playful. Picasso was interested in play. He was a playful, devious person, and his art was playful and devious. So, you know, that's part of why it's so enduring. It's a riddle that has a million different answers. So it doesn't really exhaust us.
Does it surprise you that so many Chicagoans have grasped onto the idea of trying to guess what it is or be a part of that experience?
Well, it alludes to so many things in such an interesting way, and it's hard to stop looking at Picasso because the questions just aren't answered. There are allusions to a woman's face, a dog's face, an animal's mane or hair or wings, or, you know, one can go on, and that's what Picasso's art was about. It really implied everything and didn't exclude anything. And, you know, that sounds like a kind of superficial answer, mm-hmm. but that's really, that's what Picasso was. And this goes back to the 19-teens, the things that Picasso was interested in then in sculpture, where he really revolutionized sculpture. This piece refers back to those, to that period of the avant-garde in Europe.
You know, it also, there was a lot of the pushback at the time, I mean, even the years after, subsequent years after, were about this is too erudite or this is too pretentious of a piece of art for Chicago. And it was Mike Royko who famously in the column said, no, you're missing the point. This Spanish sculptor, artist, it feels like he's rode the L in his entire life. The way that and a lot of what he was evoking was this idea of, like you said, I mean,
toughness,
mm-hmm. the idea of change and things of that don't necessarily come from just the building of this material, but the feelings that are evoked from it.
Right.
So there was this connection, and at a certain point, when was it where the city kind of went away from the idea that we wanted? Couldn't we just have Ernie Banks and embrace the idea of Picasso?
I think maybe 10 minutes after the unveiling is when they went away from that, because now there it was. It was a fact on the ground, and it's probably not going to be changed. Getting back to what you were saying about the different metaphors and the way that people interpret it, I think it could be said of all great works that they attract metaphor. And in their ability to attract metaphor is inherent an inability to say it's only one thing or the other. It must be multivalent, and it must be many things. Mm-hmm. And that's why it continues to intrigue people in I would argue, the same level of depth that the Cloud Gate intrigues people. It attracts metaphor too, but it's a very different thing. It's still very charming. It captivates people. Everybody loves it. And I would say that today, maybe that has become the Picasso of the city today.
That's so interesting.
It's the focus of everyone's attention and everyone's excitement. And now the Picasso, like the Eiffel Tower or the Pompidou Center, has just kind of mellowed with time and become part of the fabric. And it's no longer this lightning rod of controversy that it once was.
You know, I mean, I asked a question kind of provocatively before we went to the news just about whether or not this will have lasting impact, meaning, you know, it's 50 years of Picasso and Daley Plaza, and every Chicagoan in generations knows it. But a younger generation coming up may replace the Picasso with the Cloud Gate or other things that are happening, because this city has been on the forefront and been very progressive in bringing public art to the masses.
Right.
So what do you do with that? I mean, is there a point where, you know, it gets replaced, that the Picasso is not in the consciousness like it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago?
Well, hell no, you don't replace it. I mean, it's unique, and it's unique in the world. But artists don't simply make objects anymore. You know, artists work in a vast number of ways, and they do that because Picasso showed the way. P- Picasso violated the rules, and artists today do. Anish Kapoor violates the rules in some ways. But other artists who we want to see working not just in the center of Chicago but in neighborhoods, you know, they do community gardens. They work like the Astor Gates, who develops communities. There are no limits on what artists can do in the public realm. And that's what I think we want to promote the idea of, the originality of this and how artists are valuable because they show us new ways of looking at the world and changing the world.
But it was in many ways the first domino that set in motion the long chain that winds are all around downtown, and now it goes out even into the city. And so it really, I don't think anybody had any idea of what the lasting impacts of it as a piece of modern public art would be, not only as a work of abstraction by a great European master, but as an urban space. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think just a block away, then later came the Federal Center a few years later with Calder in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And De Buffet, your question of what do we imagine? Do we imagine a plaza, a city without Picasso? Well, we may have to imagine one block to the northeast, the Illinois Center, without the De Buffet on that corner. If that building
gets sold
and torn down, what's going to happen to
that piece of art? That is a tremendous point that at a certain point, public art is protected because it's part of the
public realm.
It's part of the public realm, and we know it and we love it. But there are times when the state, the municipalities, the other places, they may say, you know what, we're selling this building, we're making it a Shake Shack. Like, what do you do in that case? I mean, would we move a Picasso, or do you say, okay, let's put the tent over it and put in storage and see what happens at a later date?
No, 50 years later, things do change. Yeah. And I think these works are vulnerable, and we'll see what happens. I think it's definitely beginning to happen. Major public artworks that were privately funded that are in interiors have gone away. The Calder at the former Sears Tower.
Yeah, right.
That's a major loss, and there's not much
and that
city government
kind of
can do about that.
Overnight, and nobody has said where it's going or who bought it or what's happened to it. It's just like Kaiser Soze, gone.
I will say there's always been a push in Chicago, and you hear this from our politicians and the leaders who will say we want to be a world-class city. And when you think of public art, we're definitely there. When it comes to what we've done in our time, and this is the 50th anniversary, to think of public art before the Picasso at Daley Plaza is hard to do, especially in big cities. I mean, New York probably has some and other places, but this was sort of the beginning of really stretching our creativity when it comes to what public art can be. Are we a world class? I mean, did that open the door for Cloudgate? Did it open the door for others to say this is now not only what Chicago does, but we're going to prioritize it? Meaning that from here on out, we need to be at the cutting edge. We need to be the best when it comes to public art.
That's the message we want to send. And I think the unveiling ceremony, the restaging, is really going to be done by contemporary artists, by performers and poets and artists and youth who are engaged in art. So we really want to stress that innovation and the new and the future is what we want to be thinking about, just as we celebrate, a kind of pioneering object and public art piece.
I mean, when you think about great cities of the world, you think about their urban spaces, you don't first think about their art, but when you think about them, they are in a way defined by the intangible combination of the city fabric. What is it like to be there? And art, while not the defining element of it, is certainly a critical aspect of it. And your question of what was public art before Picasso in Chicago, to me it was, how many monuments to Abraham Lincoln can we put in one city? I mean, somebody could just do a documentary of Lincoln monuments in this town. It's incredible.
There's a ton.
A ton, but this finally broke that tide and opened it up to other things.
You know, as from a design standpoint, to have a piece like this, as big as it is in Chicago, to be relished and accepted by an entire city, even on bumpy beginnings. But what does that mean for architects, for designers, for others to have a piece of public art that is so roundly accepted as part of the fabric of the city that it lives?
Well, it's very common today, but back then, I think it was
it was a bit unusual to pair a piece of monumental public architecture with an equally important and compelling piece of public art. It's something that SOM has done. I mean, you referenced the Sears and Calder. Picasso, we worked with Miro on the sculpture that's just across the street next to the Brunswick building, also on Millennium Park with all the artists that are there. So it really is something that that we try to do, and we try to bring it to cities all over the world that we work in still today. We recently finished a public library in Chinatown, and the public library in Chinatown has in it a beautiful mural by a local artist named C.J. Hungerman, and that piece really sets off the building and draws you up the stair to see this vibrant mural. It really is a strong companion in a very different way than the Picasso is, but still something that we're doing today, 50 years later.
And Danny, I'll ask you the same question from the Department of Cultural Affairs, special events, to have pieces of art, not just the Picasso and others, but to have pieces of art that are displayed in the public that are so so well-loved at this point. What's it mean to you as a programmer, as somebody who wants this city to embrace the arts, that has happened?
Well, I think well-loved is one good thing, but another good thing is the usefulness of public art. And maybe public art should be ephemeral. Maybe it should go away and be replaced by something else. We want to try to promote that through, you know, how we're recommending changes to our Percent for Art ordinance. Right now, artworks that are commissioned have to have a physical presence. Mm. But not all artists work in that mode where something is left to worried over for years. Artists can work embedded in government. They can work embedded in communities. They can work on issues of sustainability in cities. They can work on issues of social justice in cities. They can work in a performative mode. So there's this kind of world of possibilities that our ordinance limits. And we want to try to expand the definition of art and, you know, follow artists who have followed in the footsteps of Picasso.
So what you're saying is there could be an Ernie Banks statue, finally.
I hope so. Well, there's no reason why you can't have Ernie Banks and Picasso.
That's right next to each other. The city of Chicago will celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Picasso at Daley Plaza tomorrow with an event called Everyone's Picasso. It's a restaging event of the 1967 unveiling. It's at noon. There'll be artists, musicians, a whole program. And I want to just one more time, Richard J. Daley said, and this was from Ron Grossman's piece in the Tribune, "We dedicate this celebrated work this morning with the belief that what is strange to us today will be familiar tomorrow." In studio tonight, Danny Shulman, Program Director for Cultural Affairs at DCASE, and also Eric Design Director at Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, the firm that Picasso made the sculpture for back in the 60s. Eric, Danny, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.